Before we start this episode of CFD's Podcast for Good, let's give a little shout out to our presenting sponsor, WSECU. WSECU has been a part of the community since 1957 and has been supporting the CFD in a big way since 2011. Thanks to them, we were able to bring you spectacular events and promotions like the Masquerade Ball, Golf for Veterans Tournament, and our incredible First Week to Give, which has been responsible for raising tens of thousands of dollars in donations to charities throughout our community. For more on how WSECU serves charities throughout our community, visit www.wsecu.org/community. And of course, visit our website to find out more about our incredible partnership with WSECU. And now, here's the show. All right, we're going to go ahead and keep the marathon going.
Yeah.
Here we go. Would you ever run a marathon?
Enough. I've done 2 half marathons.
You have not done two half marathons.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I could never, I'd never do that.
So I would say, yes, there is definitely a point when you feel like you're going to die.
Yeah.
And then there's a point when you feel like you're losing your mind.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And both times I did half marathons at about mile 8, yeah. I was like, this is the worst decision of my life. Both times.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, now I know when I hit mile 8.
Does the euphoria of finishing override that mile 8 sort of dread?
At the time, yeah, because I was a little more like, like a little loopy.
Were you?
Yeah. I hadn't eaten for a while, you know.
Sounded like some cartoon
like a gnome.
Elf.
Yeah.
Comes across me. Like,
exactly. Like, oh, did everybody see that?
Hey, the Pillsbury Doughboy just finished that.
I just finished with the Pillsbury Doughboy. Yeah. So I would say yes.
Yeah.
And it is kind of like, it's one of those things where I don't think about how terrible it was so much, and the terribleness it wanes, and then I'm like, oh, I should do that again.
Yeah. Oh wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. Disgusting.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't do that. That's too much.
I don't think I could do 26 because
you're not humanly supposed to do that,
right?
The guy who ran it. The guy who ran it. Didn't he die at the end of 26 miles?
I don't know. The original one.
Well, he probably should.
Yeah. Probably.
Probably felt like
he
wanted
the guy. Like, there's a story about a guy in Greece running that distance.
The marathon.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think he died. Sure.
I feel like
let's
he died. Yeah,
he's,
let's do.
He's dead.
Let's do that race.
Yeah.
Let's do the one that kills me at the end. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the first episode of season 3.
Oh, MG Bus.
They keep letting us come back and do this. This is so awesome.
I know. I wonder who they is, because they, we're going to do what we want
anyway.
I don't
think they listen.
Ha! Which is why we get to do it.
Which is why we get to keep doing it.
Yeah.
My name is Philip Kerrigan. I am the current...
You going somewhere, buddy?
Program editor of the Washington State Combined Foot Drive, and this is Heather Lucas. She is the current
fiscal and policy coordinator.
I don't know. I did that all weird.
Yeah, you did. I was like, somebody, am I going to be the program manager? Somebody going to come in
here? We're doing a reorg right here on the
right
air.
Here. Yeah. You want to trade? We can trade.
Yeah. So okay. that weird introduction.
Yeah, that's us.
It's Philip and Heather.
Hey, what's up?
How you doing? So this is episode 1 in a new way that we're doing this.
Yeah.
So for those of you who have listened before, number one, thank you very much for listening.
Yeah.
But you may have noticed that we do it once every 2 weeks, and then we splash in these like special podcasts or funny ones that we do. But overall, we try to stick to the format of Heather and myself interviewing 2 charities and then having these air every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
We are switching that up now to where we will interview 1 charity a podcast, but we're going to do it every single week. We find that I think this will bring new, fresh content. I think you as listeners will like it a lot more because you'll get a new theme every single week and a different charity perspective every single time we do this.
Absolutely.
So it's very cool.
Yeah.
Other than that, we're going to keep the format as is. We're going to have our standard question of the pod. And then we're also going to still have some facts and figures and maybe some trivia and all that sort of stuff, you know, spliced into these as well. Because I think that not only talking to the charity that's doing work in the field is important, but talking about the field itself, I think, is relatively important as well.
Absolutely.
This week's theme is an interesting one. It's representation matters. Now, you may be asking yourself, what the hell does that mean? Well, I'll tell you. So we brought on two folks, the executive director and an alumni of Clarion West, the Writers Workshop. Mm-hmm. Marnie Chua, she's the executive director, and Tegan Moore, she's an alum of the actual workshop, and she's now a writer.
Yeah.
They do this very cool thing. They're a nonprofit literary organization that specializes in fiction, particularly like sci-fi, fantasy, horror type of fiction.
Yeah.
And they literally have people do like intense 6 weeks, like in your own like house with 17 other in a house with 17 other writers, learning how to bring more diversity to your work.
Yeah.
Which I think is really cool.
That is cool.
And it was super cool talking to them about that stuff. Yeah. I thought it was really neat. So Heather.
Yes, Philip.
You are a nerd.
Yeah.
And you have written.
Yeah.
As have I.
Yeah.
But you really actually dig the sci-fi stuff.
I do.
And so one of the things we talked about in the interview was the fact that, like, that particular genre, which is interesting because it's all about your own creation as a writer. Yeah. You can create the whole world, sci-fi,
the world,
fantasy,
everything. Living being
you
in
can,
it.
Yeah, you can create everything. It's not very diverse.
No.
Did you notice that when you began to, like, kind of recognize what diversity actually was?
I think that I've noticed it definitely more in the last few years because it's a topic. It's something that people think about all the time now. So, yeah, I mean, you look around at certain things. I remember a couple years ago, the Hunger Games trilogy had come out.
Yeah.
And somebody recommended I read it. So I did. And when the movies came out, mm-hmm. there was this whole uproar about one of the characters being black. Mm-hmm. But in the book, she's described as not being white.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay, well, she seemed like she was a black character.
Yeah.
Why is it a weird thing for her to be black on screen?
Right.
I don't get it.
Right.
But people lost their minds.
Yeah.
So it was like, if you look at...
Same thing with the stormtrooper from Star Wars, remember?
Yeah, exactly.
When they first introduced Finn in the movies, it's like, what is this?
Yeah.
What, so you, like, mean a stormtrooper can't be a black guy? I don't understand.
You can have any different race represented. Like stormtroopers, mm-hmm. come on. I mean, they are everybody.
Yeah.
Why can't they be?
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, like when it comes to, say, a future world, a mm-hmm. horror world, a fantasy land, you can have blue characters and green characters and characters that are like gelatin mold people, you know, like anything.
Yeah.
But people lose their minds when it's like, why is this person Asian?
Right. Well, it really is interesting.
Why not?
Yeah, it really is interesting. And then and actually J.K. Rowling has been criticized for that in the past because she doesn't have a lot of diversity in her characters in Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think it is interesting that that's just not something that has ever been thought about. You know, a lot of times when somebody writes, they write in their own voice with their own experience.
Exactly.
And so it's easier to write a character that's complex if they look and feel and talk and think like you do.
Yeah, I was reading something too about how you can tell someone who doesn't speak more than one language is trying to write a character who's bilingual.
Because they
always do this thing where, like, somebody will say, oh, que paso, and then excuse me?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, it's hard to switch back and forth between languages. No one who speaks two languages says stuff like that.
Right.
Ever.
Right.
It's hard to switch back and forth.
Yeah,
Shut up.
I turned off my English brain and then I turned on my other brain.
Exactly. And now I'm speaking to you in Spanish.
Yes.
Hello. No, that's not how it works.
Before we jump, though,
into
this actual interview, which I thought was really cool.
I liked it.
You know, the only other side point I want to say about the interview that I think bears mentioning is this idea of, like, kids and how they come to identify. This idea of, didn't even think about it, like, if you read a book about the future and nobody who looks like you is in the future.
Yeah.
What does that tell you about what happened to people who look like you?
You're not part of the future.
Right. Yeah. Right. You're not part of the future. I thought that was super interesting.
Yeah.
But you actually do have a question of the podcast. My question I to do. You
oh.
wasn't a question of the pod. That was just Philip throwing some BS out there.
I liked it.
How about Heather, though? With
you
the
want me
official,
to throw some BS back?
Yeah, the official question of the pod. Do it.
All right. Have you, Philip Kerrigan,
yes.
ever felt like you couldn't do something until you saw someone who looked like you or had this, a similar life experience as you doing that thing? And not just in like a writing or a
wow.
film thing, like even
yeah.
in real life, like,
yeah.
you know, sports, school.
Not very many times. It could be because I'm a white male.
You identify as a white male?
I identify as a white male.
Yeah.
So, you know, admittedly, those sort of things don't come up all that mm-hmm. often. I think probably, honestly, it was a little bit, basketball might have been that way,
yeah.
you know? I mean, basketball, where I grew up,
mm-hmm.
I mean, both on military bases and then later on in life,
yeah.
is not, I mean, there's not a lot of, there's frankly not a lot of, white ball players who go very far, or like go very deep anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, the professional ranks are mostly like, you know, mostly African-American players.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you do think to yourself, like, boy, am I good enough to play with these athletes? Like,
yeah.
these guys are good. And so, you know, there'd be times where you would see somebody like, for me growing up, it was probably Dirk Nowitzki or somebody like that. You go, oh, wow, like he's professional. Like he
yeah.
can play with these more athletic guys. And so I think probably that for me was it. But I mean, honestly, you know, It's growing up in the environment I grew up in,
yeah.
And kind of having the opportunities that I've had, you know, if you for me, my experience has always been if you wanted something bad enough, you
yeah.
could work at it and get it. But I also didn't I wasn't struck with, you know, sort of, you know, some of the circumstances that some folks are struck with. You
sure,
know
yeah.
I mean? So yeah,
yeah.
I think it's me. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think more than anything, because I'm also white, you know, I see a lot of people who are white who succeed. I think more than anything, it's an attitude thing.
Uh-huh.
Like I'm direct and, not always nice when I speak to humans.
What?
I know,
that's
believe
ridiculous.
It or not. Yeah.
You are nice.
So, seeing people who act like me or talk like me or
yeah.
interact with other people.
Yeah.
The way that I would, like, oh, look at them. They're actually moving into, like, being a successful person,
yeah.
a CEO
yeah.
or,
yeah.
like, a manager or doing their own thing,
right.
living their life the way that they want to and not being limited.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, no, I could see that. Like, for my daughter especially, like,
mm-hmm.
I think it's very important that she sees that there are women who can go as far as I can.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that that's very important. And I think that, I think it starts at home. I think, you know,
yeah.
You know, you, the husbands and the fathers have to make sure that mothers and are on equal footing with everybody
yeah.
else. And I think it's pretty important, you know, for women, especially, we're still having this weird tug of war between like, what it is that success looks like for people
yeah.
who, for females. It's weird that we still have this sort of strange back and forth, but we do.
Yeah.
And I think that it is important that you see people who look like you
yeah.
make it.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
You know, and how they interact with people. Absolutely. We're going to go ahead and toss to the interview with Marnie and Tegan with Clarion West Writers Workshop. Here it is. Okay, so we are here with the executive director and alumni/writer of Clarion West, the Writers Workshop, Marnie Chua. Thank you for joining us, and Tegan Moore. Thank you for coming.
Hi, thanks
Hi.
For having us.
Yeah,
yeah,
thanks for having us here.
Thanks for being on the podcast. So, can you give us a little history of Clarion West Writers Workshop and what it is you do for the community?
Right. Yeah. So, Clarion West is a nonprofit writers workshop. And our mission is to bring high quality writing and education to writers in speculative fiction.
Mm-hmm.
So speculative fiction we define as science fiction, fantasy, horror, and
cool.
basically categories that ask kind of what if.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
give you an opportunity to really explore.
Mm-hmm.
We were named after the original Clarion Workshop in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And we were brought out here in 1973 by Vonda McIntyre. Mm-hmm. And so we have run consecutively every year a 6-week intensive writer's workshop for speculative fiction writers since 1984 when we were formally established.
Nice.
Nice.
The workshop's a year younger than me.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
So this particular podcast is about sort of representation and how much it matters. And of course, in writing and entertainment, that is still like a give and take. There's still a source of tension there. When you do a class, how important is it to talk about representation and maybe writers trying to figure out ways to represent more diverse characters in their writing?
In my experience, it almost comes up organically in the conversations that we're having in the 6-week workshop, because everybody there is at a place in their writing where they want their characters to be authentic.
Mm-hmm.
And we tend to draw a very diverse crowd. So, you know, we're people who spend a lot of time in diverse communities, and so we want to know how to represent those people accurately instead of just creating a token character to fit a specific profile.
Yeah.
Because we want to be good writers. We want to write characters that are really, really honest.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and actually representing diverse voices in the field is one of our, part of our mission. It's kind of an inherent part of what we do. Mm-hmm. And so part of, for the 6-week workshop, we have 6 different instructors, 1 each week. They're prominent authors in the field. And we are extremely intensive and focused on bringing in the authors that represent different voices, different backgrounds, and that helps attract writers that see them and want specifically to be taught by those instructors every year.
Yeah.
And so that's part of kind of our focus, is bringing in those diverse voices so they can help that kind of bring in the the discussion on authenticity.
Yeah. Yeah, that's excellent. Yeah. That's excellent.
So I'm going to throw an Oprah quote at you guys right now. Way to start the morning.
Yeah.
So Oprah Winfrey said, and as far as like representation, we've got to keep telling our stories because our experiences are so broad and rich and multifaceted. There isn't just one way to be Black. So in your experience, how difficult is it to craft a story with multifaceted characters?
Again, this comes down to good writing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
If you are doing it right, it's both hard at first, but then it becomes easy as you get to understand the character. You really getting to know other, like, actual people.
Yeah, helps. Right.
Yeah.
Getting to know people.
Right. Getting out of your sort of narrow social structure that we tend to self-reinforce with the people that we surround ourselves with. So meeting people.
Yeah.
Having an open mind.
Yeah.
Well, that is one thing, because a writer writes with the voice that's in their head.
Right.
Right. And a little bit of their own experience comes out no matter what. How do you guys teach folks who maybe have only had one experience their whole time? How do you teach them how to attempt even to, you know, make a character who maybe doesn't fall in line with that particular experience?
The 6-week workshop.
Mm-hmm.
It is a very intense experience.
Yeah.
You live in a house with 18 people.
Oh, wow.
17 other writers, and then the instructor for the week.
Wow.
And
for all 6 weeks.
Yeah.
For all 6 weeks, yeah.
Yeah.
And you're writing the entire time and critiquing. Every day is a critiquing experience.
The critiquing is actually much harder and much more rewarding than the writing turns out, which everybody says that. You don't believe it until you do it.
Yeah.
Because we draw such a diverse group of people, you are in a house with people that you may not have a lot of experience of interacting with, depending on where you come from. You know, a lot of people come from between college and grad school or after grad school, but before diving into the full-time work experience, a lot of other people just come from jobs where they took 6 weeks off or they quit.
Yeah.
Right.
And so you and because we're really good at providing scholarships mm-hmm. so that people, I mean, we know it's a big barrier to take 6 weeks off of your life,
yeah.
come to Seattle and live in a house and do nothing else but write. So we provide a lot of scholarships and a yeah. lot of support in getting people to the workshops so that they can have the experience. And so you're in a really diverse group.
Right.
Your mind will be blown by some of the things that people who've had very different lives say to you.
Yeah.
Or it confirms exactly what you thought. So
yeah.
It's a good way to get to know people and to get to know other perspectives. A lot of times you realize it wasn't at all what you thought it was.
Right,
well,
right.
As a writer, have you had that already, like in that workshop where someone says, well, you're writing about this character who's, say, for example, poor. Well, I've been poor and this is what it's like.
Not me personally, uh-huh. but it happens every day.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're all experimenting in the workshop. We're trying to write characters that we've never written before. We're mm-hmm. trying to write situations that are scary or difficult to navigate. We're trying to push the boundaries of narrative. And so we get it wrong all of the time. But the great thing about the workshop is that it is designed for you to get it wrong. You are yeah. supposed to get it wrong mm-hmm. in this context so that the people around you can help you figure out how to do it better.
Right.
Yeah.
So I mean, we learn a lot from the instructor, but we learn a lot from the other voices sitting around the table with us as well.
Exactly. Nice. And we also have, I think a part of this question is like, who's teaching the classes mm-hmm. and what are they talking about? And we have one of our alumni, Niecy Shull, and she's now an award-winning author herself. She teaches a class both for us, for other programs, mm-hmm. and also online, her own workshop called Writing the Other.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And oh, cool.
They specifically, you know, they bring in diverse voices for that. And we're talking about people of color, people of, you know, diverse backgrounds, mm-hmm. people from other countries, people with disabilities
uh-huh.
that come and talk about what their experience is and what is an authentic way to write those characters.
Sure.
And so we really try and focus on that. We do that for one-day workshops, and just having those discussions ongoing is very, very important for the authors.
Mm-hmm. It's also, absolutely. It is a big focus during the six-week workshop to talk about how to authentically write a point of view that's not yours.
Mm. Sure.
Both yeah. because, you know, we're really interested in bringing in protagonists that are diverse, but we're also really interested in creating good writers.
Yeah.
And, you know, good writing is a big part of representing people well. And Niecy, we tend to bring her into the 6 week workshop at some point. She's local.
Okay.
And so we try to get her in to speak to the resident writers. And I think most years we provide them with a copy of the book Writing the Other.
Yeah.
For reference once you're gone.
And nice. Another thing that we haven't said, but it's kind of inherent in the program, is we're really reaching out to writers that can write about their own experience.
Mm. Okay.
And so that also, there's like a whole discussion in the community right now is asking yourself if you're the best person to tell the story.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can write about the other, write the character that's different from yourself, but there's fabulous writers of, you know, of these different backgrounds that are writing, and we just need to make some room for them.
Yeah.
So we're working really hard on that as well.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. That's a really good point.
So do you think there are stories that aren't being told out there because there are different types of people who are underrepresented or not represented in modern culture?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Marnie has some statistics for you.
All right.
Yeah. On this point specifically, this is going back to something that we're really pushing in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some great studies out there. So in 2015, there was a recent study that showed basically for looking for diverse protagonists.
Okay. Yeah.
We have been stagnating for the last 20 years at about 10% of the published stories are diverse protagonists.
Huh.
And wow. We haven't been increasing that.
Wow.
And
Still today. Wow.
Now, you know, we're seeing an explosion in diversity in the field of speculative fiction and popular culture,
mm-hmm.
but it's still, you know, we just still see a lot of, you know, a favorite term right now is appropriation, but we're seeing a lot of that. You know, we're seeing books and stories and movies, scripts that are being bought from other cultures, mm-hmm. brought, you know, to our to Hollywood and basically getting whitewashed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we, so we're still really seeing that, you know, and we're seeing that in publication, in children's stories. Mm-hmm. And so it's a huge issue, you know, until now. And it's one of the reasons, like, promoting those diverse voices, making sure that as many people as possible get heard and get brought into the field,
yeah,
is still really critical.
Yeah.
When it comes to promoting somebody who's got a diverse voice, I mean, are you finding that, like, that's just falling on deaf ears, or like your audience that you would normally be promoting someone to, like, do they just stop caring? Like, what's the barrier there?
One of the barriers is in publishing.
Yeah.
Publishers and magazine editors are uh-huh. gatekeepers to the world of speculative fiction and probably fiction as a whole.
Yeah.
And when those gatekeepers are from a predominant culture, mm-hmm. And they may not see some of the diverse stories as being authentic because mm-hmm. they're not exposed to them.
Okay.
So they might see some of the stories coming at them and say, wow, this would never happen. You should change your story.
There's also cultural differences in sort of narrative speed and the way that points fall in stories mm-hmm. That to us feels awkward sometimes, because we're used to a very specific kind of storytelling
mm-hmm.
it's just a cultural difference.
Mm.
There are, I think, in short fiction, in speculative fiction, there are editors that are trying very hard.
Yeah.
And there's more diversity now than there has been.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So people are trying.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's always a good start.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that leads me to always sort of the main question I have. So, I'm also a fan of science fiction. And also you see it in fantasy as well, though. The mainstream sort of stories that get out there and that are consumed en masse, you know, usually involve mostly white characters.
Yeah.
Right? specifically, it seems like fantasy, which is kind of interesting because you can make up almost anything you want.
And so why is it all white guys?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it continues to be that.
Yeah.
Do you see that changing? Do you think we'll see more diversity as the future unfolds?
If you look at, Nora or N.K. Jemisin's novels, what's the name of her last trilogy? I know it starts with
Broken Earth.
Yeah, the Broken Earth series. Ooh. It's high fantasy written with diverse characters.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, yeah, it's absolutely possible that book got those books. All three of them won major mm-hmm. awards every year.
Mm-hmm.
They've done very well in terms of sales. So it is something that people are looking for.
Yeah. It even goes back to the readers. So sometimes I think maybe the editor and publisher make the assumption that the reader's not going to understand
absolutely
what
yeah.
this voice is.
Or
right?
the reader's not interested in
right.
reading, you know, a black lesbian's yeah. narrative of,
right.
you know,
but I mean,
exploring space.
Yeah.
But that's an assumption. And it's actually, that's a lot of the research that's been done. That is an assumption that's being made and mm-hmm. kind of an excuse. Well, our readers aren't going to buy.
Right.
But
right.
we're seeing the opposite
right.
of that.
Right. Absolutely. Well, readers wouldn't have bought To Kill a Mockingbird when it first came out. Right. The idea of something like that at that time probably was really, really radical. And so I think it's the same thing. Like, a publisher makes the assumption, no, our audience isn't going to be into that.
Right.
Right. But you don't know what the audience might be into. They might totally consume it because it's something they've never seen before.
I think if a protagonist is written honestly and written well, you absolutely will identify with them. It doesn't matter. The external stuff doesn't matter at all. If it's an authentic character, you can absolutely identify with
right,
it.
Totally.
I mean, we identify with animal protagonists,
I was just
watching the new Watership Down last uh-huh. night, which is computer generated bunny rabbits. So I think I have a crush on Hazel.
yeah, that's totally true. I mean, I think that if it feels right, then people will go with it. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And we're seeing a lot more in youth. YA mm-hmm. novels as well.
A huge explosion in YA.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so just more of that is what we're looking for.
Well, and speaking of kids, how important do you think it is for kids to see someone who looks like them? in a story. Gosh.
I mean, studies just show over and over again that being able to see, and I mean, especially with reading, right? Yeah. Reading's kind of the gateway drug, fiction, right? You know, it's kind of the gateway into reading everything else, into opening up your mind and being more curious about everything. And so for youth to be able to slip themselves into a primary character, a protagonist, into someone that is like prominently placed in the world and matters.
Yeah.
That is going to make a huge impact. And so the more that we can see of that, just the better. And I think the more that we can be aware, there are huge, like hugely successful, especially science fiction stories that have absolutely deleted entire cultures and races. And so if you're a kid and you're reading that and you say like, I don't matter, I'm not in there.
Right. Yeah. It's the future, and
it's the future, and I can't even be found in the future.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's a huge impact in itself. And so we have to change that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's totally true.
So let's say someone hears this podcast and they want to start giving to Clarion West Writers Workshop.
Absolutely.
Can you talk about what donations do for your organization?
Right. Well, so the biggest thing that it does for us is to continue to provide high quality, where we can bring in instructors from around the world and pay them well, pay them a worthwhile amount for them to come and spend their time, whether it's a week or a weekend, and be with students also from all over the world. Mm-hmm. It also helps us to provide scholarships
for those people who you really do have to sacrifice in order to come to a 6-week residential writing workshop. I know even for me, and I live in Seattle and I had a job, it was financially difficult to take 6 weeks off of your life. So someone who has fewer privileges and has to come from, you know, Southeast Asia or
Louisiana,
Africa.
We
have writers come from those places regularly to join the workshop, and the scholarship assistance is just crucial.
Absolutely.
And if we don't have those people in the workshop with us, we don't have that voice.
Yeah,
they are so valuable to the other students.
That's excellent. So do you guys have any upcoming events or programs you want to talk about?
Well, right now we're in the middle of application season for the 2019 summer workshop. So for anyone interested in the 6-week workshop for 2019, our applications are available until March 1st is the deadline.
The instructor lineup for this year is really exciting.
Okay, so any state employees who saved up the vacay.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? Got the leave
time to go. Summer workshop.
You've been wondering where to do it.
We also have one-day workshops, so if you don't have 6 weeks of your life to give, and you don't want to go through an arduous and stressful application process, one-day workshops are
cool.
They're open to everyone. All levels of writers attend. The next one is on the 27th of January with Sean and McGuire. They're held in the University District in Seattle.
Excellent.
On Sundays.
Awesome.
We've got a bunch of great ones coming up this year.
Yeah.
Cool. Are they regularly on Sundays? Like,
we usually do Sundays. Yeah. We find it's the easiest day for people to make it work.
Right on.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Marnie, Tegan, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and talking about this really cool subject.
Awesome. Thank you both.
Thanks for having us. Yeah.
Okay, so that was our interview with Executive Director Marnie Chua and writer and alum of Clarion West Workshop, Tegan Moore. Really cool, interesting interview.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to talk to them more about writing because that stuff interests me a lot.
Yeah, and then we just start talking about our own thing.
Forget
the podcast.
Just interrupt them the whole time. Yeah, that's a good point. Great point. Yeah, okay.
Can we talk about form?
right. But before we leave, you have some interesting facts and figures for me.
I do. Mm-hmm. Someday soon, I'll bring some trivia back to the table
for you to guess at. Yeah.
I mean, you can guess at this statistic. How about that?
Okay, All right.
So I found this website that had some stats about the film industry. As far as what they mean when it comes to a distribution of movie writer, like the race,
okay,
the statistics, I don't know if movie writer means exactly like a movie that's been written and has been made, or if they're just saying someone who's written a screenplay.
Okay.
So I'm not sure where where
movie writer. What the definitions are.
Exactly. There. But from 2011 to 2016, what do you think the highest percentage is for someone who is a minority to be considered a movie writer in the United States?
Oh my gosh. 30%?
Yeah, you're way too high.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What is it?
So the highest it got in that time was 11.8.
Oh my God. Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Jesus. Yeah. The lowest in that, and that was in 2013. In 2015, the lowest was
5.3%.
Wow. 5.3% of people who are writing screenplays and movie writers.
Well, that's interesting because remember the movie, the incredible movie, Straight Outta Compton?
Oh, yeah.
Written by two white people.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
About NWA.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
You couldn't find...
What?
Unbelievable. You couldn't find two black writers who are fans of hip-hop from around 1989 to write that movie?
Or maybe, like, get somebody, say, who was part of the group, you know?
Yeah.
One of those guys who is not white a writer?
And Marnie made the point. Marnie made the point, the appropriation portion, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we hate to use that word because sometimes it gets thrown around too much.
Sure.
But, certainly it feels that way when you see black characters unable to be written by black writers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, sometimes you think to yourself, like, there's got to be people with skill out there that are doing this, right? Like, you couldn't find one person who could write this in that voice with these type of complex characters.
Yeah.
Sometimes that bothers
well,
me.
Well, yeah, and just thinking about... I have some other stats about the Hollywood Diversity Report. So there was this report in 2017 that came out, and it talks about the representation of minorities, of women, of just different diversities.
Yeah.
But like when it comes to minorities, 7 to 1 is the ratio there for a writer
white
to be
characters on screen versus black.
No, just the writers themselves, starting with that, like reeling it back. Wow. So starting with the writers, 7 to 1. You've got 1 minority, 7 white people.
Wow.
As far as writers.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to women, film directors, right?
Yeah.
6 to 1.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, there's stuff like that where it's just, like, there's not a lot of opportunity out there.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, talking about having a story about, say, black characters or Asian characters or Hispanic characters and then being written by someone who's not that race or directed, you know, like... Who can you think of that is a director who's Asian? Off the top of your head, can you think of somebody? Or Hispanic? I mean, like when we were talking just a minute ago, I thought of Ryan Coogler and Spike Lee and Ava DuVernay.
Yeah.
That was it as far as like off the top of my head. John Singleton. Right?
Yeah.
Black directors.
Right. And that's, you're definitely right. Like to me, not to get too harsh on like, Hollywood all the time, but to me, you can't just give one award to like one black director and say, hey, look, we solved the diversity problem.
Exactly.
That's not how that works, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they certainly deserved it for Moonlight, especially, I thought, but like, you know, you can't just do one and be like, we're good, right?
Everybody's solid.
And then the next year, you're like, and the Hispanics got theirs too, right? With Coco and all that stuff.
Yeah.
We're good.
Okay, we're
good.
Come on
now. You can't do that.
So another thing that came from this Hollywood, what did I call it? Hollywood Diversity Report. Films with relatively diverse casts enjoyed the highest median global box office receipts and the highest median return on investment.
Of course.
And that minorities accounted for the majority of ticket sales for 5 of the top 10 films in 2015.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. So people are going to watch movies.
Yeah.
People of all different races, all different types of people are going.
Right.
And then they're not seeing themselves represented.
That's absolutely true. Yeah.
And then when I was doing some research about this kind of stuff, TV's made the greatest strides as far as having more diverse characters on TV.
Okay.
And not just people who are minorities or just like having a different gender,
mm-hmm.
but also like able-bodied people, people of different weights, people of different body types. But TV has 19% of the lead roles were played by minority actors in 2016.
Mm.
So,
still not
that great.
No, still not excellent. Yeah. Wow, it'd be interesting to see what that is for the fiction genre, like writing like novels and
stuff. Yeah, exactly.
Because I'd be I bet you it's probably around the same.
Probably.
Yeah, I bet you it's
nothing. Yeah, and strange. Like that whole idea of like as a kid, if you don't see somebody who looks like you or acts like you or has a limitation like you do mm-hmm. in a book, especially if it's something that's like futuristic, yes. this is a possibility for future.
Right.
I'm not there. I don't exist.
Yeah.
When I was doing research, I found this term called symbolic annihilation.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds Ooh, terrifying.
Yeah, that sounds
so
terrible.
So it was coined in 1976 regarding representation. Mm-hmm. And the researchers said, representation in the fictional world signifies social existence. Absence means symbolic annihilation.
Yeah. Well, think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly right.
Totally
right? You're in the future, and there's not a single person that looks like you in the future.
Yeah.
So what happened to them all?
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. No, I mean, it's a short walk. Yeah. To that assumption.
Non-existence.
Yeah.
And then your value doesn't matter.
Yeah.
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 I mean, we've talked with people before on the podcast where, like, I don't remember what podcast it was, but I remember talking with Safe Place Executive Director Sarah Lloyd mm-hmm. about school. Mm-hmm. And she had said that at no point did she think that she could enter into a profession like education mm-hmm. because she didn't see people who looked like her.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she did, she thought, oh, this is a new possibility.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like if you don't see people who look like you doing things,
right.
You don't think things are possible.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That sucks.
Yeah, no, it's exactly. You need to change that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So you better get on it.
Okay.
Single-handedly.
I'll be the
just
one
you. You're going to crusade
just
for
me,
us,
people.
Yeah.
Just me.
Yeah.
Well, it was an excellent conversation with Tegan and Marnie. It really could have gone on for a long time. So if you liked this, we want you to take another look through our iTunes feed. We have plenty of conversations just like this.
We do.
The website has all of our podcast content dating back to season 1. 2 years ago.
Wow. We were just little itty bitty podcast
little babies. Little babies with a universal mic.
We've grown.
Yes. In terms of upcoming events, we don't have much to share with folks as of right now. We do have our recognition events, which will be coming up in March, kind of all over the state. We will have some more information regarding Unguarded.
Yeah.
Which is an event that typically happens in February. We'll have more for folks as those begin to develop. And then we're excited. We just finished our annual retreat, so we'll have a lot of more information for you as we begin to roll it out with the 2019 campaign.
Because, yeah.
You know, we'll be started on the preparations for that very soon.
Mm-hmm.
But to end the podcast, what we do want to do is thank everybody for giving during the 2018 campaign. Donors like yourselves, volunteers like yourselves, made it one of the most successful campaigns we've had in a while. Fingers crossed, we might even be able to hit $5.5 million.
I dig it.
It would be amazing. Yeah. But we want to thank everybody who keeps this program afloat and who helped us with another pretty incredible 2018 annual giving campaign.
Yeah, you guys are amazing.
Yeah. And so we're excited to bring you more podcast content this year. Like I said, this is going to be a weekly podcast now involving one charity a week. So we have a really range of like super interesting, I think, themes that delve into a lot of the topical issues we're dealing with today. This being one of them today,
yeah.
Representation and how it, you know, kind of needs to change and how there are actual nonprofits who are actually working to do that.
Done.
So pretty cool. anyway, folks, thank you very much for listening to episode 1 of season 3. And we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.